Off the Ball, GAA.
I definitely feel that something needs to be done with GAA. There's no, like, nobody can deny that. What needs to be done is the other one, you know. Like, there's a lot of rules coming in there.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Best odds guaranteed on all Irish and UK racing. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Yeah, you're welcome to the Racing Pod on Off the Ball. It's Johnny Ward in the hot seat today. JD is off to Boston, having a nice time over there. I'm sure he's going to be listening in to myself and Tom Bugsy Malone on the show today. And we're delighted to be able to bring you this show every Friday. It includes analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews and crack. The first half of the pod each week is free to air and the second half will be exclusively for members. So be sure to find up. Signed up, brother, by going to offtheball.com/join. And you won't want to miss out on all the info. And Tom, if there's any indication that all is good with the world and National Hunt Racing is alive and well, Cheltenham is back.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great time of the year, isn't it? Maybe not for stable staff who haven't had a day off since the, I think it was the 18th of September or something like that. Just so much racing on. We're just going to get it with this... with this kind of changeover time of the year. But I think the sign of a Cheltenham card on a Friday and Saturday, just definitely something to put the pep in the step, and all the, you know, jumps previews are being published again. And yeah, really, it's just time to really sort of remind ourselves kind of what happened last year, the jumps and, you know, the flats winding down. Yeah, lovely time of the year, even if it has just started to rain.
You actually mentioned the stable staff there. This is something I was thinking of during the week. I'm not sure if a survey or a study has been done of stable staff in Ireland, in the sense of if racing is trying to extol the benefits of the government putting in so much money every year. If you look at the number of stable staff in Ireland, that a lot of them probably didn't go to college. Some wouldn't even have finished secondary school. You have a wide kind of mix of nationalities. And these are people who are employed, working in rural Ireland, and probably have a good outlook on life, live a very healthy life as well. They work hard though.
Yeah, they do work hard. But it's just something that dawned to me last week. I just looked at the calendar and I was like, when is the next day without racing in Ireland? It's actually next Tuesday, 27th of October. And the previous day without racing was back on the 18th of September. Like, I mean, if you're working in a big, okay, maybe bigger yards are not as vulnerable because they tend to have more staff. But, you know, it's pretty tricky to kind of even book a little holiday or try get a few days off, because it's an enormous amount of racing for quite a small country, really. And it's a big ask. And, you know, it's tough on trainers trying to keep staff, trying to retain staff. You know, one of the things you want to do for your racing staff is to try and give them a bit of structure in their lives. You know, say, well, you know, you only have to work every other weekend, or, you know, work their 4.5 days. But with that much racing on, it must be very difficult to sort of administer all that and manage a bit of leave and a bit of time off for the teams.
Yeah, the football season's coming to an end in Ireland, but racing just goes on and on. I think this month there might be one day where there wasn't races, about 45 meetings. Do you feel in general there's too much? That'd be my belief. I think, you know, it's particularly from sort of April to the end of October, it's just a carousel. Like, you have a lot of double meetings during the week. Obviously a lot of kind of industry meetings where, you know, you're not necessarily going to get much of a crowd. Or do you feel it's kind of necessary to support the horse population?
Oh, well, it's definitely necessary to support the horse population. And by its nature, the horse population, you know, we need those midweek meetings. It's just particularly at, you know, spring and autumn time when you do get the jumps, the better jumps starting to just ramp up a little bit and the flat is winding down. But at the end of the flat season, you know, you have to run off a lot of cards to satisfy that horse population. So, yeah, there probably is a little bit much. It's probably necessary given what's created. And, you know, if we were to dramatically cut back that, it would create probably another problem as well for the horse population in Ireland. So, yeah, look, it probably still needs a little bit of tweaking, but and it probably is a little bit too much. But I think maybe we probably just need to just work in that flat structure a little bit. It goes very long. You know, you look at the way they are, and the UK do plenty wrong, but maybe we need to, you know, chop a week off the end of the flat season or something like that. Maybe just bring it into maybe the Dundalk rotation earlier, let Dundalk just do the Wednesday, Fridays or something like that, and, you know, see how you go from there. But having, you know, racing every day for 5 weeks solid is certainly not something that would be sustainable from a manpower point of view. And, you know, we're probably looking at a situation now similar to what would have happened in the sort of, you know, peak boom years, where there are other options for staff on the ground. There are other options, you know, as an employment market, it's there are plenty of opportunities for people on the ground, and you know, for recruiting staff, there are surely more lucrative and easier ways to make money than working in horse racing on the ground.
It's definitely a tough life, right? And I think a lot of people are just in it for out of the love of horses, and kind of they don't really know much else. And I think that's kind of the life that they pick. On the first half of the show, we're gonna look ahead to the national hunt season a little bit. Might get an anti-post selection from Tom if he has something. But we'll also look at the William Hill Futurity Trophy Stakes. So this is it used to be the old Racing Post. It's now the William Hill Futurity at Doncaster. It's a mile race it's one of the last 2-year-old races of the season of repute at Doncaster on Saturday. And we'll have a look at that. Maybe, not sure if Aidan O'Brien has a stable star in it or not, but we shall see. And then the second half of the show, we look ahead to Cheltenham on Saturday, Galway, and a little bit of Aintree as well. So we get to the national hunt season ahead. I do want to start, I suppose, Tom, with Willie Mullins commenting recently that he's going to run more horses in Britain earlier on in the season. And I was actually noticing this, like the prize money in Ireland of late, like our prize money just, it kind of looks worse and worse with every year. And if you go over to Cheltenham now, there's actually relatively not bad prize money, smaller fields. Gavin Cromwell was very adept at it. He was brilliant at this meeting last year in particular. And Willie now is going to, he said the ground is a bit softer than maybe it would have been in previous years. We're going to target British races as well in the earlier half of the season.
Yeah, and I think where Ireland is vulnerable from a prize money point of view is kind of the middle level. Obviously, the top level is very safe; it's very secure. The grade ones are always going to be fine, but there's certainly an issue with kind of that listed level and the kind of premier handicaps, or maybe just the level just below the premier handicaps. I mean, think about maybe horses on the flat who'd be rated, say, in the high 80s to mid 90s, like really good horses. What they are earning for placing in kind of lower level pattern racing does not for a great business model make. But, you know, it's as simple as that. And realistically, you know, if you have a horse like that who is rated around about 90, you know, you're going to be getting phone calls from Australia and Hong Kong. And if the horse is fit and sound and well, you know, they're going to be sold there. And that's just it, you know. Looking, say, for example, at the Flat and the Curragh, like they have a 20 grand minimum prize money value, which is excellent. But it's particularly brilliant for the lower level horses. But again, you know, I know a trainer recently who won it, you know, 0-65 at the Curragh. There's like 12 grand to the winner. You know, that's unbelievable for that level. That's absolutely brilliant. And those prize money basements that they've put in are incredible for the lower level horses. But there's definitely a question for the middle level horses that will apply across both jumps and national hunt. Again, that level where they're not quite grade one horses, they're probably only, you know, the nature of the beast, you might only be able to win one handicap a year just because it's so competitive. And sure, when you win one, you're going to go up a stone anyway, and that's it. You have no chance of winning the second one. So, there's definitely a vulnerability there. And those kind of 50, 60, 70 grand races just don't seem to be around as much as before, if you know what I mean. Whereas the big pots, you know, the big headline pots, they're all still good, they're all still healthy. But it's the middle ones, and it's something Ger Lyons has been particularly critical of as well. You know, I think of the likes of his horse, My Mate Alfie. Like, yes, he's done very well this year, but you look at the horses that finished second and third to him, and they are not making pots of money.
It was interesting as well. This is just kind of an extension of the point on prize money. Alan Del Monte did a piece with Nick Luck and Nick Luck's podcast recently, and he basically said, this is speaking from the Levy Board perspective, I think, give or take, he said, betting turnover on racing is down 20% in 2 years in Britain. Like, these are staggering numbers, like really staggering numbers. And he basically said the Levy Board have like... They kind of have put money away just to deal with any shortfall in the short term. So it's not an immediate issue. But like anecdotally, And I've spoken to a couple of people who worked in the betting industry about this, and I might write a piece on it in the near future. But betting turnover on racing is in a precarious place, and so I am worried about prize money going forward. I really am, actually.
Yeah, and particularly in the UK, where it is intrinsically linked to betting turnover and that levy. You know, I mean, you did a great piece on Racing TV with Charles Burns, and he expressed his concerns as well about the level of betting turnover on horse racing. And, you know, it's not fashionable, and God forbid you might say anything positive about betting, but like lots of people
like
to do it.
This is the thing, Tom. This is the thing.
And it's a massive, yeah, you know, it's, you know, like, I mean, we're going to sound like a pair of absolute psychos here, but, you know, the pair of us obviously bet and we enjoy it and we do it to a level that's not going to affect our lifestyle in any way, shape, or form,
that's
in a negative
the point
way.
That Charles made as well. If this is an issue in Race TV, but this is an important point. I really want to stress this because we shouldn't feel like pariahs because we want to have a bet at Dundalk on a Friday night. We want to have a bit of fun. And like, we shouldn't be tainted with this brush that all gambling is bad, because it can be very, very good recreational fun, and racing needs it.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the funding for the sport. It's part of the attendance at the sport. It's, you know, for example, you know, the bookmakers at the Curragh and Nace this year have both, you know, sponsored gates to get people through the door. Like, you know, the bookmakers want people to go and to go to the races and have a bet as well. And like, you know, as well as betting turnover, many people who are significantly interested in racing can't have a bet. You know, they have their accounts closed and stuff like that. You know, they get severely restricted in what they are allowed to. So there's a mechanism there where a lot of huge bookmakers are effectively ensuring that the trajectory of turnover and betting in horse racing is going to continue going in the direction it's at. You know, there's more and more conglomerates coming into the sport. Effectively, many betting brands are one entity. You know, it's like a Procter and Gamble situation where it looks like you've loads of brands, but really it's all the same company. And you know, that's just happening on a huge scale. And these massive corporations are affecting that level of turnover.
Yeah, and even I suppose anti-post markets as well have changed a lot. And you know, anecdotally, you will tell even at Cheltenham now. You know, if you go into the betting shop, things have changed. A lot of betting shops are quieter, and maybe it's a one for another day, but it is just something to bear in mind. And I find people in racing are completely in the clouds about this. They're just not conscious of how worrying the drop in racing turnover could be for funding the sport. And bear in mind, like, the government is paying pretty much half the prize money in this country, and our prize money isn't particularly good as it is. But the National Hunt season ahead, Tom, it's, I don't know, are you a flatter National Hunt man, actually? It's kind of like,
I'm a bit like yourself, Johnny. We're on 365 days a year, man. You know what I mean? And I certainly have no interest in getting really, really excited about Cheltenham in August or in, you know, September, October.
I did think of you during the week when it was like the Racing Post headline was, are you with or against Constitution Hill at 7-4 for a race that takes place in March?
I'm like, if you can't find a 7-4 shot between now and March, it's better than that. But this game isn't for you.
Oh man, like it's one of the races on the Tuesday at Cheltenham. It's in March, but yeah, like, is there anything kind of that you're looking forward to in terms of National and season, or how do you see the narrative? Willie domination, obviously.
Listen, like, as I felt like there was sort of this notion, maybe in the UK, that because Willie Mullins had been champion trainer in the UK once, that might be it. I know he'd leave them alone now. It's like, have you met the man? Do you know anything about him? He's just like, do you know what? We've done this, and everything he does, he wants to do it again, but better. You know, that's Willie Mullins. So, you know, if I was Paul Nicholls or Nicky Henderson or Dan Skelton or whomever, I'd be way more worried than I was this time last year, because, you know, it didn't really come into their thinking until really Grand National that, oh my God, Willie Mullins is going to win this, isn't he? I absolutely think he will do it again. He's just going to, he has so many horses. There's so many opportunities. He's absolutely brilliant at race planning. Also, some of the changes that have been made to Cheltenham Festival mean he'll have to run his horses more often. For example,
yeah.
If he wants to win a handicap, he wants to get the novices in, you know, the change to the turners. So you can't just go there in a couple of runs. You know what I mean? You're going to have to run your horses in the UK. If you want to get an accurate UK mark, the best place to do it is run your horse in the UK early on in the season and then get that mark and preserve it. You know, you don't get that Irish trainer tax or whatever, where you might get, you know, you plan a horse's campaign and then before you know it, the handicap comes in and snaps 7 pounds on him. So I would imagine that Willie Mullins is going to make his brother George's company even more money this year, trekking across and backing across the Irish Sea every single weekend, or at least on big weekends once the rain starts to fall.
When I got into Cheltenham, say it was, I think it was 2003, like, and I mean it was an unbelievable buzz. It was new to me. I wasn't into racing at that time. Kind of fell in love with it during college, and like the betting shop and the hype of Cheltenham over those 3 days, and I was really, really hooked on it. Have to say this year was an antidote to that. It just felt so flat to me. I wasn't over there now, but a lot of people who were over there said it had lost its magic.
A cost of living thing, Johnny. Yeah. Look, the thing is, if you price people out and you turn something into a sort of an event, like a bucket list type event, then it will lose its soul. There's no doubt about that. You can't have a situation where if you isolate core fans, you will create the same atmosphere as if an event is packed with core fans. It's why things like the League of Ireland are actually doing incredibly well with loads of international visitors who want to recreate an authentic football experience versus the kind of cold corporate situation of a Premier League game where you're, you know, surrounded by tourists on a day out and stuff like that. And you don't get that, you know, raucous atmosphere that you want, that you know, what should be on a Saturday, that where you can just let off steam. Like that's just, you know, and I'm obviously not condoning any level of, you know, football hooliganism or anything like that, but you know, it's what creates an atmosphere. Real fans with real passion creates an atmosphere. Betting also creates an atmosphere, because if you are financially invested in something, you will care more about it regardless. So, you know, having an engaged crowd of hardcore fans is really important. And look, it's something Willie Mullins has said already. I think he said it during the summer when he's asked about the changes at Cheltenham Festival. He's like, look, if you price out the fans and the common man, what can you do? You have something different. And that's a massive part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, we're going a little bit around the roundabout course here in terms of getting to the nubs of racing. So we're going to finish up with a little bit of chat about Doncaster. One horse for the National Hunt season. I'm going to give Hello Neighbour. He's available at a big price for the Triumph. I think he's a serious, serious bet. I know it's a Cheltenham and it's in March, but I like having these long-term anti-post bets. He's going hurling. He's trained by Gavin Cromwell. He's exceptionally talented so far. I think he's outstanding value. You've got anything to look out for the season ahead?
I want to see where Majver goes.
Yeah,
I just think he's an absolutely exceptional horse. If he goes chasing and he's only four, he will get some really nice allowances earlier on in the season. So he's definitely one. You know, the look again, and you think about will Willie Mullins continue to dominate Cheltenham? It's like look at the way the novice races went last year, and it's just a case of, well, what's going to keep happening? You know what I mean? He's got such a brilliant bank of novices, and yeah, look, Majra is the horse I'm definitely really big fan of for the year, and obviously Brighter Days Ahead. If she's staying over hurdles, so if. You know, maybe they'll be tempted to have a cut at the Champion Hurdle with Lossy Mouth. There'll be a lot of chat about Lossy Mouth, and I just think Brighter Days Ahead might just sneak up a little bit there, and she might be one for the Mayor's Hurdle.
Okay, so we've got a few minutes left and we're going to talk about Doncaster. I'm more of a flat man, I have to say. Can't wait for the Breeders' Cup. Bugsy, we should make it a day out. Go to Down Royal on the Jay and Wine Day and then just go all the way into the Breeders' Cup Classic that night and have a day of like 12 hours of non-stop racing and have to have a lot of fun along the way and kind of, yeah, have a nice meal in between and then like toast the Breeders' Cup Classic. But the race at Doncaster...
I love the Breeders' Cup. I love the Breeders' Cup. I know I've kind of bemoaned isolating the true fans, but there's something so absolutely Hollywood about the Breeders' Cup. It's amazing.
So Doncaster tomorrow, Aidan O'Brien, who will be representing the Breeders' Cup, he runs Delacroix. This is in the William Hill Futurity Trophy Stakes. I'm actually going to give this horse as my selection for this part of the show because William Hill is actually top price 16-1, and it's kind of a five-reach way bet because this horse, Nebras, he has to take on horses with far, far superior form. form, but he's a fascinating horse for these connections because of his pedigree. He's Baidu Bowie, and he's a half brother to Nashua. And on debut, he's, I believe, from kind of a second-hand account, John and Taisy Gosden expected him to sort of come second or third under Holly Doyle at Newmarket, but really, really got going late in the race. Looks a horse full of potential. And as you say, he's 16-1. The Irish, John Gosden, also has Detain in the race, but William Buick rides Anno Domini, who's unbeaten. Delacroix, much, much better the last day at Newmarket. Strong at the finish, won by a neck, but I thought it was a ready enough neck. And Wimbledon Hawkeye as well, who won at Newmarket the last day on soft ground, son of Cameco. It's a cracking race, and we've 8 runners as well, so we've nice each-way terms.
Yeah, and I certainly wouldn't put you off knee brass out of a pivotal mare as well, so I'll definitely handle the reins off and go. I really like Hot as Hell. Absolutely aimed at the race for Jessica Harrington and Shane Foley. It's running about 7-1. I think that's a really good each-way bet. Kind of surprising, I'm pleasantly surprised how well Too Darn Hot has done as a stallion.
Yeah,
and this fella could be a bit of a flag bearer for him. I do like Delacroix, but maybe just at the prices there. I think maybe with Delacroix, Ryan Moore has not had many bad rides in Ireland, but maybe he didn't cover himself in glory with Delacroix at the Dublin Racing Festival. This horse is incredibly well bred by Dubawi out of Teppan, related to, you know, the Group One winner in, was it Grateful is her name? Like, it's just that amazing strategy of Coolmore to just breed the best of the best, and their investment in these top class mares continues apace, you know, with Teppan there. They bought her, what, 7 years ago or whatever. But yeah, I like Delacroix, but I think the bet is probably, for me, Hot as Hell, 7-8-1 there. I think that's a brilliant each way price. I know he's beaten 2 runs back at the Curragh behind Henri Matisse, but he was coming off a break that day. He knew he'd step forward from the run, and has done well since then. So yeah, I like Hot as Hell each way, and I wouldn't be against your selection, Nebras, either. Lots of really going the right way, and like I said, just a really good pedigree too.
Hot as Hell could be named after yourself, Tom Bugsy Malone. Is that your selection for this part of the show?
Yeah, I'll go with that Jessica Harrington, really sweet in that horse when I spoke to her the last day.
Lovely. So they're the two, make mine a double J. We're actually in the same race, Nebras and Hot as Hell, both at decent prices in the big one at Doncaster. And the first half of the pod is over now, and this is the Racing Pod and Off the Ball. If you're listening to the free version of the podcast, we're going to be leaving you here. If you're looking for more, including our analysis of additional races at Aintree, Galway, Cheltenham this weekend, go to offtheball.com/join, subscribe, and get the full podcast every Friday with all our racing tips, insights, and stories from the week's action.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18+. See gamblingcare.ie.